When you have insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. And Donald Trump has lost his last-ditch effort to delay the hush money trial. We have such a great show for you today. Congresswoman Becca Belint stops by to talk to us about the Comstock Act and the effect it could have on women's reproductive health care across America. Then we'll talk to Whitney Fox about her run against one of Congress's most unhinged MAGA Republicans. But first, we have the host of the Lawrence O'Donnell Show, MSNBC. He's Lawrence O'Donnell. Welcome back to Fast Politics, fan favorite, and honestly, my favorite, Lawrence O'Donnell.
And survivor of the eclipse.
More importantly.
Yeah, the 90% eclipse in New York City, which was really great and was beyond my expectation for it, especially the drop in temperature. That was really amazing. You certainly come out of it with a newfound gratitude for the sun, something I've avoided my entire life. The sun has been my enemy, and I just, I'm a shade seeker, but now I'm beginning to get it. I'm beginning to understand why the sun is there.
So one of the things I want to talk to you about today was, okay, so we're now getting close to 200 days from this election.
You know when I found out it's 200 days?
When?
Right now. This second. This is when I found it out.
It's so depressing. It's depressing, right?
No, I don't find it depressing.
Oh, good.
No. No, I mean, look, it there's a little bit of life strategy involved, but it's mostly for, you know, reasons of real information and the way things look. But the life strategy, and this, I learned this very, very late in life, and it was a movie star who taught me this lesson. And so I can't say his name because it'd be too much name dropping. But in the lesson was taught to me while we were waiting for our cars at a valet at a Hollywood party, where I had a pilot in development at a network at the time. And I said something about, you know, we're going to find out, you know, next week if they want to make the pilot. Out of 10 scripts, they make maybe, you know, one or two pilots. So, and I kind of left it at that. And he said to me, well, you know, optimism is a choice. And by the way, that was my bad imitation of him. So like anyone who's trying to guess. And I went, geez. And it never crossed my mind that it was a choice. I thought, you know, realism, which is to say cynicism in the culture I grew up in, is the only reasonable position, because you will arrive first at life's recurring destination, which is disappointment. So if you are expecting the worst, congratulations, you know, you got it. But then every once in a while, you don't get the worst. And so what that means is you spent a considerable amount of time feeling the depression of being hit by the worst, and then you didn't get hit by it. And in fact, you know, the network made my pilot and put it on the air. And so I feel like if the presidential election goes in a direction that I don't like on November 5th, I will have plenty of time beginning midnight of November 5th to feel unbelievably depressed about it. And none of you people who got a head start on me will feel any less depressed than I will. Okay. So let's wait for then. These may be the final pleasant days of our lives. Let's not rush, you know, to the horror. If someone told you, you know, you have 200 days of goodwill and, you know, goodness in your life, and then bad stuff's going to happen, I choose to enjoy those 200 days.
That's I think it's sage wisdom right there.
I think it's the kind of wisdom you have to age into. I was not available to that idea when I was 35. Like, I was not available to it.
Yeah. No, I think for sure. One of the other very smart things you've said to me was that being an outsider to American politics and not is actually a huge advantage when you're looking at it. I'm wondering if you could talk about that, especially right now.
Yeah, because unfortunately, politics now has too much data, way, way, way too much data. You know, it's like what's happened to professional baseball, you know, where they have, you know, the number of seconds between pitches and the number of times this guy has hit third pitch that has been thrown to him. And, you know, when I was a kid, they had batting averages and runs batted in and strikeouts. And, you know, that was about it. You know, and it's really all you needed to know. I mean, if you look at the minimal data baseball players of, say, the 1950s, of the, you know, these DiMaggio's and Ted Williams and 1960s, Willie Mays and these people, there's no new form of data that would increase your understanding of how great Willie Mays was at the game of baseball in every single angle of the game of baseball. And so that incredible limited amount of information that fans and coaches and players had in, say, the 1960s in sport was adequate. You don't need this extra stuff. And so we now have this crazy amount of data, just a crazy amount, way more data than we ever had, you know, decades ago. So many different entities doing polls, you know, universities doing polls. Mm. The reason they're paying money to do a poll, let's say your name is Suffolk University. And can I have a show of hands of people who know where Suffolk University is? Thank you. I'm the only one. Okay. Because pretty much everyone in my family except me went to Suffolk University. Suffolk University is a commuter college in downtown.
Is it in Suffolk?
It's in downtown Boston, which, of course, as you know, is Suffolk County.
Right.
So the only reason, you know, Suffolk University can be known outside of this commuter college market that it has been in since my father went there when he was a Boston cop and he went to college nights, is to do a poll, is to pay for a poll that we then announce to the world is a Suffolk University poll. Or here's another one, and raise your hand in, I'm going to exclude one state, but in 49 states, if you can tell me where Quinnipiac College is, I will buy you a car. And I knew where Quinnipiac College was before it started paying for polls because I was working for a senator representing the entire state of New York. And so you had to know about obscure little places like Quinnipiac College in upstate New York. These players are in this game trying to get attention for their schools so that kids out there applying to colleges will go, oh yeah, I've heard of that place. I mean, it's the likelihood of you applying to a college you've never heard of is much lower than you applying to a college you've heard of. And so when you think about what they're trying to actually do, it's not inform voters. No one's trying to inform voters with a poll. They're trying to inform reporters with a poll and say to reporters, this is the way you should think about doing your horse race coverage. And in the competition of, you know, Emerson College, which is a college, okay, I'll do this one quickly, a college in Boston, okay, which trains actors and musicians and decided to get in the business of paying for polls so that they could attract more applications from, you know, other places in the world and try to compete with NYU and USC and these places. So they're all in competition with these other businesses called things like CBS News and the New York Times, who also pay for polls, which is to say they purchase news stories to put in a possessive way on the front page of the New York Times, because the New York Times paid for this news by paying for the poll. So there's this poll saturation that is unhelpful. And the more you can pull back from that and ignore it, and the more you know about polls, the more you ignore them. And you start to pay attention to them in around August of the election year, because only then do you start to get likely voter polls, which are the only ones that matter. And you start to get them in the so-called battleground states, which matter because, you know, a poll of California doesn't matter. A poll of Massachusetts doesn't matter, because the founders, in their infinite stupidity, which was as big as their infinite wisdom. I'm going to grant them infinite wisdom as long as we grant them simultaneous stupidity in creating the Electoral College, which really wasn't so stupid from their perspective, because they were mostly anti-democratic men. They did not believe in democracy as we understand it. They believed in this very select group of people choosing the people who would be in government. And so the idea that, you know, just a giant popular vote of the whole country, of everybody, you know, over a certain age who can vote, they would think that was insane. They would object to that. And so many of them, if they were, you know, back here today, they'd go, hey, we're really proud of the Electoral College, because at least that is anti-democratic. And that's that's working the way we wanted it to. But, you know, so polls, you know, they become interesting when you're talking about likely voters. None of them are likely voter polls now. They're all registered voter polls. You know, likely voter polls closer to the election, they become kind of interesting. But if you've lived through Michael Dukakis's 18-point lead after the convention, after both conventions in 1988, Michael Dukakis had an 18-point lead over George Bush, the first George Bush. Mm-hmm. And there is no Dukakis Presidential Library, because turns out those were useless polls. And those polls were way outside the margin of error. We have not seen a lead that big in a presidential poll since Bill Clinton had a lead like that over Bob Dole in the spring of 1996. And it narrowed. It went down. It was much smaller toward the end there. But, you know, and you have to know that there was not a single poll. And now I'm teaching ancient history, but it's worth knowing. There wasn't a single poll in America that predicted that the Republicans would win the House of Representatives for the first time in 40 years in 1994. That was not predicted by a single pundit or a single poll. It was also not predicted at the very same time that the Republicans would win the United States Senate. Win it back. They'd won it before, but, you know, win it back in 1994. So that, and that, by the way, was the biggest electoral surprise of my lifetime, were both of those things. You know, the Republicans winning the House, which literally had never happened in my lifetime, and the Republicans winning the Senate. Those were much bigger electoral surprises, actually, than Trump winning in 2016. And so there's just no comfort or wisdom to be taken in polls. And, you know, if the polls, if every single poll, you simply flipped the outcome, right? If you put the name Biden where the name Trump is, well, you know, Trump is ahead by 2 points or something in this poll. No one rooting for Biden would feel better. You know, if you think, oh my God, Trump's going to win, where do you get that confidence looking at the poll? Because the polls are so tight, you know, they're just so narrow that if Biden was on had the higher number in these polls every single time, no one would feel any more comfortable. You're not going to get comfort out of polls in the modern presidential election environment, because they're just going to always run way too close.
Right. And it's still within the margin of error.
Again, a note about the margin of error. When someone, when you read the poll and it says the margin of error is, let's round it off to 4 points. Let's call it three, which is a low margin of error. They're usually higher. 3 points means that if someone is polling at 45, that person could be as high as 48 or as low as 42. It's actually a band of 6 points within which that person's number lives somewhere. Same thing with the other person's number. So pretty much every one of these polls all the time is a tie within the margin of error.
Yeah. One of the things, though, that Trump has definitely seen is that that he's losing on abortion. And that is why last night or yesterday he put out this statement. You've talked about this on your show last night. You've talked about this really in a important and interesting way. And you have a little bit of history from your earlier career in the working in the Senate. So I'm curious what your take on this is. It's like 1973 again, right?
Yeah, well, you know, Trump has never understood abortion politics since he became a candidate. And because he never understood anything about it, he just adopted the Republican position word for word in his first run for the presidency. And he understood, by the way, that he absolutely had to do that in order to get the nomination. And Mitch McConnell had to combine with him to produce a list of judges that he would nominate. Now, no one's ever done that before in the history of presidential campaigns, saying, here's the list of people I will nominate to the Supreme Court if, with the vacancy that was being held open for him. And that list, of course, Trump didn't know a single name on it. He didn't know anything about it. It's just like, this is what I have to do. This is what I have to do to get the nomination and to hold on to those votes. I'll do it. And now he's discovering the challenge because he thinks, you know, he's a moron, of course. So he thinks he's found a solution that can work for the Republican candidate. And of course, it doesn't, because he has now embraced as right and just every single abortion in the biggest abortion state in the union, which is, of course, California, because it is the biggest state for everything, including agriculture and every other thing that begins with A, California, or any other letter. California has the most of it. So Donald Trump is saying, you know what? It's up to the states. So every single abortion in California is 100% fine with me. And he's also saying at the very same time that the Idaho law that sentences you to prison for 5 years for involvement in an abortion is also totally fine with Trump. And so one of the reasons why Donald Trump would be very afraid of a presidential debate, which I suspect has a strong chance of not happening, and I hope doesn't, because they're not debates and they're just stupid exercises. But the problem for him in a debate where he can't escape being confronted with certain things being said to him is, so Donald, you approve of the 5-year prison sentence in Idaho. You think that is correct, that states should be allowed to do that? And he has to say yes or no to that. Of course, he wouldn't say yes or no to it. He would just run around in crazy verbal circles. And at the same time, you can say to him, you approve of every abortion in California and New York, right? You approve of all of those. And so that's the crazy box, you know, that he has put himself in. And he's a known liar. Trump voters know he's a liar, right? And so everyone on every side of the issue knows he's trying to lie his way through it. That's what he's trying to do now. While, of course, because he has no other accomplishments, proudly taking credit for overturning Roe versus Wade. You know, just proudly taking credit for it. Something that is opposed by a very, very large majority of the voters.
Yeah, that video was so incredible because he's like, I did that. And he's like, but.
By the way, can I say a word about the video? Because I do this.
Yeah,
I do this thing on my show that for the first time last night after the show, I began to second guess. I won't give Trump the whole screen, right? Because it's just too repulsive in every way to have him on the screen. But when we have to see him say something, I give him half the screen and then I occupy the other half. Or if I have guests, I give them a small amount of the screen and we all occupy the screen. so that you at home will not be alone with Donald Trump on your screen. And however, after the show last night, so I see a tiny image of Trump because I'm looking at it in this tiny monitor during the show when we do those shots, right? And after the show, I see the full screen video. Stephanie Ruhle runs the full screen video of him saying the same stuff. And I couldn't believe what was on his face. There was some unbelievably strange bronze mud. Someone who grabbed some 40-year-old bronzer and just, he looked like a monster to anyone who was looking at that. And you got to wonder, like, the people working for him, I guess they're so terrified. None of them consider him Mr. President, which is what they have to call him, of course. The shit on your face really is a bad idea, you know? Or are they just doing us the favor? Are they sitting there going, you know what? Hey, like in their memoirs, they go, yeah, I'm the guy who made sure Trump looked really awful in his videos, you know, 30 years from now. That's going to be their big reveal. I just couldn't believe what he looked like.
I too had that same thought. Thank you so much, Lawrence, for joining us. I hope you will come back.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Spring is here, and I bet you are trying to look fashionable. So why not pick up some fashionable, all-new Fast Politics merchandise? We just opened a new store with all new designs just for you. Get t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and tote bags. To grab some, head to fastpolitics.com. Becca Belint represents Vermont's sole congressional district. Welcome back, Congresswoman.
Thank you so much.
One of the things that was so exciting about you is that you are young. You represent Vermont's only congressional district.
Yes.
The stuff that is high on your agenda is the kind of really smart stuff that I, too, care passionately about. So let's talk about the Comstock Act. When did you learn about this act from more than 100 years ago?
Yeah, so it's like 150-year-old misogynistic law, right? Designed to control women. 150 years.
Created to prevent pornography from being sent in the mail, right?
Well, yes, pornography, but also anything that was considered obscene, a corruption of morality, and it criminalized sending contraception, anything related to abortion through the mail. And it was not exclusively that. There were also some parts of Comstock that were about mail scams, basically. But
right.
The issue that we're most concerned about, of course, is the fact that this was essentially criminalizing women's bodies. And so it is so outrageous and ridiculous that we're even having to talk about this now. But this is the playbook.
It's from 1873. It was an anti-obscenity law that banned the mailing, sale, advertisement, or distribution of any drug or implement that can be used to cause an abortion. When did you realize that Republicans were cooking up a plan for this?
I was in the state legislature before I was in Congress, and we saw so much in the playbook that the Republicans were using in state legislatures. And they really signaled to us, it wasn't just that they were going to try to make abortion difficult. They wanted to completely ban it. So we in Vermont, we set about codifying reproductive rights in statute and then in our state constitution. But I don't know if you know this about me. I have a master's in history.
So you actually knew about this?
Yes. And when you think about, you know, here's this man who was a Union Army veteran who essentially went from his place in Connecticut to New York City and felt like, oh, you know, New York City is a den of sin. We have to control these licentious women. And so it also got to the point of ridiculousness. I was telling my staff earlier, he would also try to ban the showing of Botticelli's The Birth of Venus in New York. So it was sweeping what he considered to be obscene. And so it's shocking to think that this is what the Republicans in the MAGA movement, in the Trump movement, what they want to do is bring us back to that time when women don't just have access to their own bodies and making sure that we have a right to a full range of reproductive health, including abortion. They want to bring us back to a place where contraception is also called into question, whether we have a right to that. It is absolutely about controlling women's bodies and dragging us all back to the 1870s. Think about that.
When I listened to these oral arguments and I heard Alito and Thomas talking about the Comstock Act, what I thought was really interesting was they didn't refer to it by the name. They referred to it by the number. And I think that was very intentional because they knew
that they're sneaky.
Right. Alito said something effective. Well, that's widely known. Do you come in, do you run into interference with the widely known and commonly used, you know, he didn't say Comstock Act. He said, you know, 2347 or something. And I was like, oh, shit, they're really going to use the Comstock Act to try to ban sending stuff in the mail.
Exactly. We heard them say, quote, this is a prominent provision. It's not
right.
Some obscure subsection of a complicated, obscure law.
Right.
Everybody in the field knew about it. So they're saying they're breathing more legitimacy back to the Comstock Act, which has been considered dead law for a long time. I want to bring up for listeners that if you haven't taken the time to go back and look at what Project 2025 is all about, and Jonathan Mitchell, who is one of the lead architects, he is this extremist attorney who he's always looking for loopholes and he's looking for workarounds. He does not want the Supreme Court to have jurisdiction or authority over these issues. And so he's trying to do an end run around it. He was the one with the mastermind behind the creepy provision in the Texas law that said Americans could spy on each other and turn individual.
The bounty hunters, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so he said, quote, there's a smorgasbord of options available to us because Comstock is still on the books. That's what we're dealing with now.
Right. I remember that. And what's interesting, I think, about SBA was SBA really was the precursor to Roe, a full year before the Supreme Court was able to overturn Roe v. Wade with Dobbs. They had really pretty much outlawed abortion in Texas. It's just a little like bit of trivia. Comstock, Anthony Comstock, was actually ultimately later in his life became pro-choice.
Yeah, but what happened in all of the years of his crusade is he actually delighted in the fact that he was terrorizing women who he saw as not upholding morality. And we have him in several instances gloating about the fact that he pushed women to suicide over the issue of contraception and abortion. It's so important for us to understand that things that we think are absolutely beyond the pale and crazy and would never happen, that's what they're planning for right now. That's what they want. They absolutely want us to lose the ability, not just to lose our ability to have access to abortion. They are entertaining the fact of not giving people access to a full range of contraception. And they also want to bring back felony punishment. That is part of the Comstock Act. They want to punish women for making decisions about our own bodies, right? These are not misdemeanors. It's shocking that so many Americans thought that Republicans were not focused on overturning Roe v. Wade because they absolutely signaled that. That is exactly what they've been working on for so, so long, which is why we have to think really carefully about all the different things that we can put into place, you know, considering overturning Comstock being one of them. We were talking earlier today, my staff and I, about how they're going to try to moderate their views because they've been caught saying the quiet stuff out loud. And so you've got a situation where Carrie Lake made a statement today saying that Trump didn't speak for her when it came to abortion, because they're realizing now that he didn't speak for her, and also that the Arizona decision was going to be politically damaging. And so we can't be fooled. You've got Trump himself has changed his position on abortion 13 times in the last 25 years. So we can't believe anything that he says. He and those like him, they push forward anything that's politically convenient. So what we need to look at is the playbook that they're all following, which is the Project 2025 playbook, reinstituting Comstock, controlling women's bodies, and beyond that, criminalizing our decisions about our own bodies.
The Arizona judiciary, right, their Supreme Court allowed the reinstatement of a law from 1864, so right around just, 160 years ago, but who's counting? So now you cannot get an abortion. A doctor who helps perform an abortion could go to jail from 2 to 4 years.
And no exceptions for rape and incest. It is clear that when you say there will only be exceptions for the life of the mother, that is so ill-defined. You've got doctors right now living in fear that they're going to be prosecuted or locked up. And so this is terrible for women and girls in Texas right now. In Texas too, but in Arizona, because basically, if you look at when that law was passed in 1864, okay, women weren't allowed to vote.
Right. Slavery.
Public office. Right. Exactly. Slavery. They couldn't own property if they were married. They couldn't sign contracts. And so this is essentially, again, when we say they want to bring us back 150 years, it's no joke. Like, it's not hyperbole. We need to understand that these attorneys, these conservative attorneys and all their apologists in Congress, they want a national ban in every, possible way. And the reason why they want to reinstate, essentially, Comstock is because 2/3 of all abortions right now
are the pills that come in the mail. And they're trying to get around sending stuff in the mail. And you won't be able to get birth control pills in the mail either.
Exactly. And as I was talking with an attorney friend of mine who works in this space, and she said they're also concerned that if you have a sweeping interpretation of Comstock, that means Also, you can't send medical gloves through the mail. You can't send anything that could possibly be used within an office for abortion, right? So it's absolutely would bring it to a nationwide ban, and they could do it by simply bringing back into use this archaic 150-year-old law.
It was originally a morality law for a different time. One of the things I'm struck by is, you know, there's this new Biden ad where you have this woman in Texas who's so brave, and really these women who have come forward, you know, they've had these terrible, tragic situations, and then they've had to go in front of people and to share one of the most personal, devastating things that can happen. But during this ad, she narrates that she had to carry it. You know, she was a human coffin until she was allowed to give birth to a dead baby. And one of the things that I'm struck by is, like, better legislation, more clear legislation would have prevented. It's one thing to want to ban abortion. It's another thing to give so little of a shit that you don't write the laws in order for them to be enacted, and you have women as collateral damage throughout the country. And now you have all of these women living in states where they can't have abortion. So talk to me about, like, legislatively, you serve with some of these people. You're on committees with them. I mean, do they just not give a fuck, or are they just stupid? I'm sorry, that was...
Many of them believe, and they show this through their actions, they believe women are second-class citizens. They do. And they legislate that way, you know, and they have candidates running on the GOP ticket this year who said women shouldn't be allowed to vote. Like, they're saying the quiet part out loud. That is, like, absolutely, they want to control us. They want to take away our rights. They do not believe that we should be treated as full citizens. I honestly believe that based on what I'm seeing. And what's interesting too, Molly, so having worked so hard on reproductive issues in my home state, which is, you know, a very left-leaning state, Vermont.
Right.
Even among some of my Democratic male colleagues, they would say to us, you know, in caucus, why are we working on this? Why aren't we working on something that really impacts people? And of course, the women in the caucus, you know, we would be absolutely furious. But that is this idea that is still very much in, I think, the minds of Americans and American men in particular, even if they see themselves as being supportive, being pro-choice, they do not understand that this issue is not just about abortion. It's about the economy. It's about women's autonomy. It is about our ability to control when and how we have children. It is our ability to not, as you said, carry a dead fetus in our womb, because some men don't actually even understand how the women's reproductive systems work. And I have been on multiple call-in shows in my time as a politician talking about these issues. When I would get callers, and I would be so, it was so clear to me, they didn't understand women's bodies. And ultimately, they believed it was the woman's responsibility to manage whether they got pregnant or not. And, you know, and since we're being real with each other, one of the things that I would say to constituents, if it was a male caller saying it was all the women's responsibility, I would ask them straight up on live radio, have you always used protection when you had sex? And they would sort of, no, for real. Like, if you are policing my body, let me reflect back to you, you know, a logical conclusion there. And we have to have full-throated allies in this. And yes, women need to show up at the ballot box en masse this November. But damn it, we need our allies. We need all of the people who love and support the folks that will be impacted and are impacted by these laws to stand up and to not make women have to once again do the work that benefits all of us.
I mean, it's funny because it's like, I think so much about when SB 8 passed and everyone was saying to me, you're crazy. this is not going to be the end of Roe. And even when Roe was overturned, you had people like Rich Lowry and Sarah Igers Flores writing op-eds saying that Roe was baked in, voters don't care about Roe. And I mean, how much do women have to die before anyone gives a shit about them? And it really is, you know, we're half the population here, guys. Like, so crazy and just infuriating to me.
It is. It's infuriating. And we have to turn that fury and that anger into action. Because as I said, we know the playbook. We understand what it is that they're trying to do. And I strongly believe that it is absolutely about controlling women's bodies and their minds, our ability to vote. These folks are not trustworthy partners in government, okay?
Right, and that's the understatement of the year.
Right?
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, as you say that they say, oh, Roe is not going to be overturned. I got that as well when we were codifying it in our statute in Vermont and in our Constitution. I definitely heard that. You are overreacting. You're hysterical. You're over the top. This isn't going to happen. And here we are, not just with Roe overturned, but with these sick conservative attorneys trying to bring back into play a 150-year-old misogynistic law. It is a desperate attempt to try to control us. Can't let them.
Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you.
Oh, appreciate you.
Whitney Fox is a candidate in Florida's 13th congressional district. Welcome to Fast Politics, Whitney Fox.
Thank you so much for having me, Molly. Happy to be here.
So tell me, what district are you running in, and tell us a little bit about your race.
Sure. Yes, I'm running in Florida's 13th congressional district. It's the St. Petersburg, Clearwater area of Florida. And I'm running against Anna Paulina Luna, who you might know as the Freedom Caucus leader. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what your district is like.
Sure. So my district is a very moderate, pragmatic district. It's Charlie Crist's old seat previously.
Oh, wow.
A third of our voters are independents, and a lot of our, you know, district, they really pride themselves on their independence here in Pinellas County. So it's a great little place here in Florida, and they are fired up and ready for November, let me tell you that.
Anna Paulina Luna, I think of her as like Marjorie Taylor Greene, but not as famous.
Right. That's exactly right. And it's interesting because this is not a Marjorie Taylor Greene or Matt Gaetz district, Molly. This is a, like I said, very moderate district of thoughtful voters. And they are eager for new leadership. They are shocked that Luna won.
How did they elect that person?
Yes. You might know 2022 was a rough year across the board in Florida. I mean, voter turnout was quite low. And for Democrats, it was a pretty tough year. So that she won with just 53% of the vote in 2022. So for her, this is her first term in office.
She's done a lot of crazy stuff. Talk to me about sort of her, a little bit about sort of what she's famous for.
Yes. Well, I think that she's most famous for really being focused on chasing culture war headlines. And, you know, then she is addressing everyday issues of Americans. She's concentrated on UFOs. She's written a children's book about how the election was stolen. So, I mean, it was, you know, a children's book, like a banana that looks like Biden and an orange that looks like Trump, and the banana cheats to win a foot race. So these are the types of things she's concentrating on. I mean, and every chance she gets, she's calling to defund government agencies whenever they don't give her what she wants. She tries to shut down the government every chance she gets. Impeachments, ousting any speaker if they have a conversation with a Democrat. So she's just in D.C. causing chaos and doing nothing for her constituents, which is part of the reason why I'm running.
What is your story in Florida and how did you get there?
Well, I was born and raised here in the Tampa Bay area. This is where I grew up. I'm now raising two little girls of my own, a four-year-old and a two-year-old, and my parents live here. And I've been working for our district and public transportation most recently. So I was the director of communications and marketing and working on legislative priorities at our Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority. And, you know, really seeing the people who rely on public transportation and how it connects us to everything from affordable housing and food, of course, or to jobs or medical appointments. And really, a lot of people are struggling here in the district. But what really lit a fire in me to run for office was, I'll be very honest with you, was having a baby. The medical bills, the lack of paid parental leave, the lack of affordable childcare. I couldn't believe that this is how we start families in America and that we are in the streets screaming about it, because I think it's so important that we care for people from the very start. And, you know, so many other countries have figured out how to take better care of their people. And I think that we could be doing a much better job.
What would that look like in your mind?
I think it really starts with focusing on the issues that people care about, right? Like the affordability crisis that we're facing here, especially in Florida. Our inflation is 2 times higher than the rest of the country. And people are really struggling with skyrocketing insurance and, you know, not finding affordable housing. So I think that that's something that we definitely need to address. You know, I think about when I grew up also, I remember, you know, I was raised by my single mother here in Tampa Bay, and we used to kind of every Sunday, we have an activity of clipping coupons out of the Sunday paper and organizing them in her coupon box before we'd go grocery shopping. And I know what it's like to grow up with, you know, a single mother and making sure that we're making ends meet. And I know that a lot of families are struggling with that today as well, and even more so. We also have a lot of seniors in our district, and they're scared of losing their Social Security and Medicare and worried about affording prescription drugs, and especially on their fixed incomes. But really, it's just we're focusing on taking care of people, and people are tired of the polarizing politics, and they just want a functioning government so that they can make, you know, put food on the table, a roof over their head, and work one job and you know, get their basic needs met. And I think that, of course, a big one for us is going to be fighting for reproductive rights. I mean, that's a huge issue here in Florida, as I'm sure you're well aware, with everything that's going on in the state of Florida with when it comes to abortion and the new 6-week ban that's going to be going into effect, and the ballot measure that's going to be on, you know, on the ballot this November. That's going to be a big point that we're talking about on this race.
You have a MAGA governor who has really not spent much time worrying about what's happening in Florida because he's been busy trying to run for president. Now that dream is dead. And you have inflationary problems. You have your insurance premiums are crazy. Talk to me about the flood insurance climate stuff in your state.
That's probably one of the number one issues that we're hearing about when it comes to insurance. I mean, everyone's feeling that it's a huge issue in Florida, and people are struggling. And I know that that's something that we are, a lot of people will say, oh, that's an issue that's going to be addressed or needs to be addressed at a state level. But we're not taking that as an answer. We are looking into what can be done at a federal level and what actions can we take to help people, whether that's, you know, making sure that they have proper incentives to make upgrades to their homes and really investing in infrastructure, right? Because we want to make sure that we are investing in the right infrastructure to make sure that when these storms hit, when hurricane season comes, that people are prepared, that our infrastructure is prepared. $1 spent in prevention is worth $6 in recovery. So instead of waiting until a storm hits or where there's flooding and, you know, fixing it afterwards, we need to make sure that we're putting the proper things in place beforehand to be prepared for those types of things.
So one of the major conversations that everyone has been having with me, the sort of like annoying behind the scenes conversation that people keep having, is people in the pundit industrial complex keep saying, Florida's not really in play. It's nice that Biden thinks Florida's in play, but he doesn't really think Florida's in play. So is Florida in play?
Well, I definitely think it is, especially, I mean, even before the ballot measure, but now even more so. I mean, our race specifically with, you know, Anna Paulina Luna in District 13, we know that this is the most flippable congressional seat in the state of Florida. And it's because of how extreme Anna Paulina Luna is. And that is not aligned at all with the people here in this district. And we know that people are just tired of the red versus blue, the Democrat versus Republican, and they want a functioning government. And things have just gone too far in Florida and too extreme. And thinking about the fact that, Ana Paulina Luna supports a national abortion ban without exceptions of rape, incest, or life of the mother, that she has these extreme stances of wanting to shut down the government, focusing on all these other issues that
bring back family separation.
Right, exactly. So we know that a lot of people are feeling that it's just gotten too extreme. I mean, I have moderate Republicans in our district reaching out to me saying, what can I do to help you? She has got to go. So we think that it's very true that things have just gotten too extreme in Florida and people are tired of it.
Florida was sort of known as a safe haven for abortion in the South. Do you think now you have a 6-week ban and you're as extreme as any other southern state? I mean, do you, as a Florida resident, someone who grew up there, I mean, are people kind of shocked by that?
Well, yes. Well, and I think my heart is broken for what this is going to do for women, for families. I mean, this is huge. I mean, recently, I volunteered as an escort at a women's clinic, escorting women from their cars to the clinic. And they need these escorts because there are protesters who are just shouting the most violent things at these poor women as they are looking for just contraception or a well woman visit, reproductive health care. And a lot of the women I escorted were from outside of Florida, were from neighboring states. And to think that now Florida is joining in these neighboring states and that there is no access anywhere in the southeast of the country, this is dire. Women will die. I mean, doctors will leave the state. There will be a chilling effect on women seeking medical help for pregnancy-related issues. And then what's next? Florida will be investigating miscarriages as potential felonies?
Well, that's happened in Ohio. I mean, remember the Brittany Watts case where Brittany was actually had to sit and wait to find out if she was going to be indicted for, what was it called, mishandling a corpse. And she had gone to the hospital twice for this miscarriage. I mean, these are women having miscarriages being arrested.
It's terrifying because, I mean, I myself had a miscarriage and it was a frightening experience. I mean, many people have, yes.
And yeah, if you're over the age of 30 and you're trying to get pregnant, you know, you're more likely. I mean, yeah, go on.
Well, good for you to go through that emotional roller coaster and that, you know, traumatizing experience of having a miscarriage and now having to be afraid of you know, obviously a third degree felony if they're going to investigate you, if they think it could have been an abortion or not seeking the care that you need. It's heartbreaking to think that women will be afraid to seek the care that they need if they do have a miscarriage.
It's just completely disturbing. So what are you hearing from voters? What are they saying? What's your sense?
Most of the voters that we are talking to, whether they are Democrat, Independent, Republican, they believe that women should have the freedom to make these decisions themselves without government overreach. I mean, the people in my district feel very strongly that government should not be reaching into this issue. They should not be in their bedrooms. They should not be in the doctor's offices. And they are fired up and they are ready to go to war. Because, I mean, I have had many conversations with older women who've said, we've already fought this fight. We thought this was settled. We know what it's like to not have access to reproductive health care. We're not going through that again. And they are very fired up. And then, of course, we have many people who are upset about all the issues about IVF as well. I mean, people who are struggling to have families and want to go through the process. I mean, that's really raised a lot of eyebrows with especially moderate Republican women who are very upset about what's happening with that, you know, not potentially having access to IVF.
I mean, that's a legislative thing that could have also been avoided. But I think what's so interesting about that one is that you had Republicans, you know, they had this quest for embryonic personhood, and they had been working behind the scenes to do this for a while. Like with so many of these reproductive health laws that Republicans have passed, they're so badly thought out. Like IVF is an enormous business, right? Doctors make a lot of money. It's super expensive.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
What did they, when they, you know, they closed down, they ended up closing down all the IVF clinics in Alabama.
Right.
Because nobody put together that embryonic personhood would then shut down IVF. And furthermore, like when they legislated it, they just decided they would indemnify the clinics instead of actually creating, you know, some kind. I mean, like this, they're still very much on this embryonic personhood gig, right?
Right. Well, and like you said, I mean, all of this is just unnecessary and could have been avoided. I mean, it's the natural consequence of, you know, life begins at conception laws, and they just didn't care what the consequences were. And I think that especially with the Republican study committee's budget that they just put out, I mean, which Ana Paulina Luna is obviously a part of.
80% of the Republicans.
Yeah. So, I mean, which endorses legislation that would threaten IVF nationwide and backs the Life at Conception Act, granting full rights to, like you said, to embryos from the moment of fertilization. So it's terrifying is what it is. And we have a lot to fight for. And trust me, these are bipartisan issues that people feel very strongly about in my district, especially, you know, having these conversations with both women and men and families. And the stories that I've heard and that they've told me, it's heartbreaking. And they are scared, especially with the 6-week ban going into effect. And, you know, because of all of this, I mean, Florida is now the primary battleground for abortion rights here in America, especially being the third largest state.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing I think with this abortion ban is that the numbers in Florida, I mean, are humongous. So now you'll have women in all of these southern states who will have, you know, miles and miles and miles. I'm wondering, what are you doing? You're talking to people in your district, you're out there, you're doing town halls. Tell me how you're campaigning.
Yes, I mean, we are talking, we're going to different community events, of course, talking to voters. And one thing that is really important to me, especially, you know, being a mom of two little ones, is meeting voters where they are. And we are even, you know, going to playgrounds to talk to families and having playground meetups. We're doing, you know, going to different community events and organizational events to make sure that we are out talking to voters. We're having even a Mother's Day event where we're saying, come and you know, we'll have activities for your spouse and the kids while you come in and hang out and have a relaxing Mother's Day, and we'll talk about the issues. There's not been much of a focus, especially from a mother's perspective, I think, in Congress. I mean, I recently learned that I think it's less than 7% of members of Congress are mothers with young children. So I'm making sure that we are tapping into, you know, these different voters that maybe don't get a chance to have their voices heard or have these conversations. So definitely making sure that we are getting out to speak with the people in the district and hear what issues are most concerning to them.
Yeah, and I think that's really a good point. I mean, this is a flippable seat, and Florida is a different state than it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago.
It truly is, and I think that's what's so interesting, you know, about this race, is because a lot of people are feeling hopeless this election year, and they are having a hard time knowing what they can do and feeling all they can do is vote. But our race, we are getting a lot of feedback that people are saying that we are inspiring hope. And this is a race where you can actually make a difference by, you know, supporting our race, supporting my candidacy, for this being not just the most flippable seat in the state of Florida, but our shot of getting one of the most conservative far-right extremists and Freedom Caucus members out of Congress. So, you know, investing in a race like ours can actually make a difference in supporting us and people's lives, especially on these issues like abortion, when Ana Paulina Luna is a supporter of a national abortion ban.
Thank you so much, Whitney Fox.
Of course. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it, Molly.
And now your moment of fuckery.
Jesse Cannon.
Molly Jungfast, we often joke about how the MAGA people say the quiet part out loud that they shouldn't be saying, but then what it's funny is when the MAGA people have their Venn diagram overlap with the RFK people, because they are one and the same.
RFK is New York. I don't know. She works for his campaign.
She's a ballot expert.
Oh, even better. And she has said the quiet part loud. She said that basically the only reason he's running is to make Biden lose. These people are not smart. And thank God they're not, because this is one of the most important elections, probably the most important election we'll ever have. And they're not smartness. They're saying the quiet part loud is our moment of fuckery.
That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait,
did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.